All right, you're listening to the Talking Point. Welcome to the third and final hour of the show today. Yeah, thanks for those reflections on the conversation we had at 10 o'clock and really just looking at the importance, the role of history, especially as we not only mark this 30 years of democracy, but as we make sense, right, of what it means, the significance of it in relation to our past, but also as building blocks then for the future. Well, coming up in this hour, we're going to continue with a conversation that we kicked off, I think it was in the last 2 weeks, and we're looking at freedom through the eyes of persons with impairments. And we started looking at the progress, but also the challenges that are faced by persons with impairments. And a lot came out of that conversation. A lot of marginalization still exists to a large extent, whether systemically, whether structurally. And, you know, the complaints that have been raised by our guests are really legitimate, from exclusion in representation in various factors of our society. And, you know, even though we have policies that are meant to advance equality, it has not, however, translated into the implementation of such policies, which is why persons with impairments are still, by and large, greatly disadvantaged and excluded, not only from the economy, but from many aspects of our social life. Tarina Wenzel is National Director at the National Council of and for Persons with Disabilities. Tarina, good morning.
Morning.
Ari Serlis is former CEO of the Quad Para Association of South Africa and a member of the Presidential Working Group. Ari, good morning.
Good morning and morning to Emma.
Abongile Kantini is a diversity, equity and inclusion specialist. I understand that we've just lost Abongile on the line. We're going to try and bring her back up. So, Tarina, there was something interesting that Abongile had raised with me and my team, and that was around the language that we use to describe persons with impairments, because obviously we've moved, you know, from different aspects of language, right, and sort of then settled on describing persons with disabilities as exactly that, persons with disabilities. But the language has since moved on, and it's no longer deemed appropriate to be talking about persons with disabilities. Speak to us about that. And I also think that it's a moment where we can learn a bit more about what has been happening in the sector.
Oh, thanks, Cathy. Yeah, the language thing is a good one. Obviously, words can, you can kill people with your words. I think in the apartheid times, we've learned a lot about that. So exclusive type of language is completely unacceptable. I'm just going to mention a few examples. You mentioned persons with disabilities. As far as I know, and maybe Ari can correct me here, but as far as I know, persons with disabilities is absolutely acceptable, yeah, locally, and also accepted widely in the disability sector and in circles across the world. And that is also the language that is used in the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities, as well as in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. It is indeed persons with disabilities, and we embrace that person-first language. Disabled people is also acceptable. In our own organization, we respect people who use that, but we prefer person's first language. I don't know that has changed at all. What is not acceptable is to speak about people living with disabilities. Persons with disabilities are not living with a disability. They live with a cat or a dog or an uncle or an aunt, like somebody in our youth team said, if I was living with my disability, I would have kicked it out long time ago. So that's one of the terminologies which is frequently used, which is not acceptable. And then there's a range of other things in terms of language. For example, we prefer that people do not use PWDs, the acronym, because it sounds a bit derogatory. It's almost like you're referring to people as something far away from the community. We also don't like it if people say community of disabled people, because there's not different communities. We all live in one community. And deaf people who are born deaf, which is written with a capital letter D, and they've got a language issue, because sign language is not always accepted everywhere, although it's now the 12th language. In their case, they speak about the deaf community, capital letter D. That's not appropriate for people like you and I. If we would become deaf today, we would not suddenly belong to the deaf community because we don't speak sign language. But they've got a shared history and a shared culture and a shared language, and therefore deaf community is appropriate. Like you would say, Zulu community, Afrikaans community, isiXhosa community, and so on. So then people often refer to deaf people as deaf and mute, which is very unacceptable, because people do not speak a vocal language. It doesn't mean they're mute. They speak a signed language for which they use space. So that is something which is a complete no-no. And then things like if you would say somebody is a polio sufferer or a sufferer of cerebral palsy, actually the people are survivors, a polio survivor, a cerebral palsy survivor. So we can go on and on. We've got a whole document about that, which we make available, especially to media, but also wider than that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tarina. Of course, it's important, right, that you know, we too are able to keep up and to use the right language. Ari, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yes, well, thanks. I think Tarina nailed it. The absolute term referring to people with disabilities is persons with disabilities, and I'd like to take us back to the UN Convention definition of persons with disabilities. Is persons with disabilities include those who have a long-term physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairments which interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis. Okay, sounds a bit complicated, but break it down to one sentence. Disability is an experience that arises out of the interaction between a person with a health condition and the context within they live. Now, Tarina mentioned the word disabled people. I think that term is very appropriate in the context of if somebody is faced with a flight of stairs, they are absolutely disabled by the stairs, not anything to do with their health condition or what, let's say, mobility aid they use. And so we use that term in an advocacy role when we feel we have been disabled by, let's say, society's misuse of terminology or by infrastructure or not having transport. We are clearly disabled, but we are persons with disabilities. So just to give you an example of how you, let's say, use the definition, in, let's say, the case of a wheelchair user. If someone using a wheelchair in an informal environment where there's no ramps, there's no bus stops, there's no public transport, they are absolutely disabled. They feel every minute absolutely excluded from society because they're not in an accessible environment. Whereas, for example, myself, who's a wheelchair user, I live in an urban area where there's toilet facilities in the town, there's accessibility in the town, there's an understanding of disability. I hardly feel my disability, even though I'm using a wheelchair, because my environment is accessible. So the context within which I live is accessible, and people are sensitized to disability. So we both use wheelchairs. One of us comes from an informal area. One of us comes from a good urban area, and we live two completely separate lives. So that probably puts it into context.
All right, Ari, thanks for that. Abongile, I understand you're on the line. Abongile Kantini, Diversity, Equity and Inclusion and Belonging Expert and founder of Holding Albus. Abongile, good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, colleagues. I'm sorry, I sort of had a connection problem.
No,
I'm back.
That's fine, Abongile. So we just started off with the issue of language, right? What language do we use to really to describe persons with disabilities, but especially in the context of everyday conversation? And I thought I'd started off with just giving each of you an opportunity to set the record straight, because Abongile, you had raised the fact that, you know, much of the language has moved, it's shifted, and we now talk about persons with impairments. So your own view on this issue of language.
Yes, thanks, Kathy. So my colleague just formally spoke about the impact and how we address our interaction with the environment. In fact, that speaks to the adopted model now, which is called the social model. Back then, we used to use the medical model, which says somebody is broken, they need to be fixed. We are directly talking to their physical or medical condition, right? So we would say they are autistic or they are epileptic, or so we would really refer to the condition. But now, we're really referring to the interaction with space and society, right? So now the idea that you are disabled is far more physical and a social interaction. So going into a shop or the mall, I am disabled by not being able to enter because somebody is prohibiting me to do something. And moving from the language around disabilities to impairments actually speaks to the idea that you are separating what the individual is to what they are being disabled by. So it doesn't feature, or it doesn't really align to say somebody has disabilities, and then again you describe disabilities as the obstacle. Surely you should be looking at, they have an impairment, which is a visual or a mobility impairment, but the disability they are actually facing is more social and structural. And so to me, it makes sense to make that shift in language. It's all good to say we've moved away from the medical model and are not identifying people by their physical makeup and their medical conditions. And then yet we say there are people with disabilities. Again, it seems to be counterintuitive, but also reverting to old patterns of behavior and not actually socially transforming with the new definition in our own language.
So is persons with disabilities, as we've heard from both Tarina and Ari, as per the UN framework, is that an appropriate and acceptable way of speaking about it?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't think that it's not, right? I think it is appropriate in the sense that that is what we now understand. But for example, Kathy, most individuals in society don't understand the shift to the social model. So to them, they may still process us saying that we are persons with disabilities and still liken our bodies to having the disability. So in terms of also, this is just really challenging what we are normally saying and what and how we are normally being in space. So yes, the language of persons with disabilities is not rejected, but at the same time, we need to realize that my colleagues and I, we understand what disability really means and being disabled means. It's an interaction with space and society. But everybody else may say we are persons with disabilities and refer to our bodies and still see us as the condition and see our disability as who we are.
Ari, you wanted to come in there.
Oh, no, look, I think what you said is absolutely appropriate. But, you know, if we're talking, let's say, to the media, and you want to refer to persons with disabilities. That's the word. We use person first with disability. Person is the most significant part of the statement. So if we were giving a lecture to the media, we would say there's only one term to use, and that's persons with disability. And once you've got that right, then I must say there's nothing more that irks someone with a disability is being referred to by their disability, and also being referred to as, let's say, disabled people in a different, in the wrong context. And so we're quite sensitive to terminology. And once you get it right, I guess the response from a person with a disability you get will be appropriate.
All right. So, Tarina, I want us to go back to where we left off now that we've sort of dealt with that. You know, when we concluded the first part of our conversation and what really necessitated this follow-up was you were highlighting the extent to which some of the social services that have been that are provided for specifically for persons with disability have been left completely sort of in disarray. And you were specifically speaking to us about a school that has had very little attention to and it's leaving, of course, so many members of society in despair because they simply do not have access to education facilities.
Yeah, no, for sure. Besides the fact that there's a whole lot of individual persons with disabilities or parents of children with disabilities that come to us and say that they've been sent away from schools because of their impairment. They cannot be taken into a school because of their impairment. And this is mostly where we talk about mainstream schools, which, according to our legislation, they're supposed to be taking the kids into the mainstream schools. Obviously, there's a set of criteria, and we completely understand that. But just this morning, I read a report from an occupational therapist. It was from Universitas Hospital in the Free State, which sent somebody to a special school, and this person really needs to be in a mainstream school. And in fact, the parents decided to rather take the child to a mainstream school, and she's coping very well there. So on the one hand, there's the reluctancy from schools to take pupils with disabilities. And then on the other hand, there's a large number of quite severely intellectually impaired people who are denied schools altogether. And then you have got the group of people who are in schools. And then we must always say there's some special schools which are really, really fantastic, and they're not called special schools anymore. They're awesome schools, but for purpose of everybody's understanding, I just use the term special schools. But the one that I specifically refer to is the school in Umtata, where the spokespeople from the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape are actually lying to the public by saying the parents signed off for the kids to be placed in another school because the school in which they are, the Kwezi Lukuza school, is so dilapidated and nothing is positive there. There's no running water in most of the bathrooms. The kids were sleeping on brick beds and so on. And then the media speaks to them and then they just tell the media, well, the public, a whole lot of nonsense, which is untrue. But the parents are standing up for the rights of their children. The Equal Education Law Center has become involved, taken statements from the parents, so I think it will start moving quicker now. And there's a whole range of other things, the misuse of the children and the abuse of the children by caregivers or so-called caregivers, and the fact that since this came to the fore, the Education Department and the school has done nothing to train the staff, who clearly do not know what they're doing. And again, we can't generalize. There is now a nurse there who's apparently fantastic. I haven't personally met her or seen her in action. But we appreciate the media, like yourselves, gives us an opportunity to talk about this because a lot more public pressure is needed to resolve these things. Many of the kids don't even have wheelchairs or they've got inappropriate or broken wheelchairs. And some of the wheelchairs were allocated to the kids when they were very small. And now, when they're teenagers, they're still sitting in the wheelchair which they got when they were a four-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, it is absolutely atrocious to have that be the case. And in many ways, Tarina, what it says is that where there is dysfunction in our public service system, it equally affects persons with disabilities, but probably to an even greater extent.
Yeah, no, absolutely indeed. You know about so many schools where there's still pit latrines and things like that, and that is a complete disaster and accident waiting to happen as we constantly hear. But you can imagine if you are also in a situation where you've got a very severe impairment, like, for example, these kids, and there's no accessible facilities for them. And parents are poor and they live far from the school. And sick children has to wait for a parent to come and pay attention to them because the school doesn't do that. But as I said, now they haven't been open. They opened about a week ago, but only for a few children. They don't have the ways and the means to open for more children.
Okay. We'll continue the conversation in a moment. It's 11:30. Time for the latest news headlines.
The Talking Point with Cathy Motlhatlana. Weekdays, 9 a.m. till midday.
We continue the conversation on the Talking Point, looking at our freedom really through the eyes of persons with disabilities. Tarina Wenzel, Ari Serlis, and Abungile Kantini are our guests for this morning. So, Ari, just the fact that there's a need for public pressure to be able to change what is happening at some of the institutions. And I know we've already exhausted the conversation on policy and just the fact that there is no commitment to follow through on what policy prescribes in as far as persons with disabilities are concerned. It really creates a situation that is quite disheartening overall. It paints really a bad picture.
I've got a view on change making, and I think that the only way we can change this is if people with disabilities and persons with disabilities make the move to make the change. And so I guess this Freedom Month is leading up to the elections, and here we have an opportunity to go to the polls on the 29th of May and at least make one big effort to have the changes made that we think will make a difference to. It's implementing legislation. So I want to use an example, if you'll indulge me just for a minute. Let's say, and it's not a bad guesstimate, that there's 4 million persons with disabilities out there. If only 2 million of those can vote, so that's half the number. Then if only half of the 2 million, that's 1 million now, have registered to vote and vote. That's now another 50% of the group of persons with disabilities. That's us. So a million persons with disabilities go to the polls. If they, for example, and it can happen, all voted for one particular party that they thought carried the flag of persons with disabilities, and you need 65,000 votes to get one seat in the National Assembly, There is 15 seats in the National Assembly. Our vote is very powerful. We could secure 15 seats in the National Assembly. Now, that's just if those 1 million vote for one particular party. So let's say I've got a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, or a husband, or a wife, and I just ask one of them to vote with me. That's now 30 seats in the National Assembly. Come on, political parties. See us. Engage with us. Get us into your manifestos, but most importantly, put people with disabilities and persons with disabilities high up on your National Assembly candidate list. Because if we need the change made, it happens in the portfolio committees in the National Assembly. And we should be there. There are a few parties that have got candidates with disabilities on their list. And later on, I can tell you who they are. I don't want to get into a big political debate, but change is made by all of us standing together and say, that's who's going to represent us very well.
All right.
I think the time is now when we must decide where we put our cross.
Thanks for that, Ari. Let me take some of our callers. Warren, you're calling us from Durban. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathy. Thanks for a great show again, as per usual. For me, the social model really was enlightening and shifted my thinking in a major way, and I was totally moved when I studied it at university a few years back. I mean, for example, I have a vision impairment that's simply easily managed by, you know, wearing spectacles. And society treats me like I'm a clever person, you know, I'm smart, I'm intellectual, because of this device I have on my face. And yet, if a colleague of mine develops a hearing impairment because of noise or chemicals in the workplace, you know, they get treated like they're dumb. And so stigma is a huge thing that creates these barriers, that actually creates the disabilities, you know, that people, you know, they battle with. And for me, that social model made a huge difference, and I wish more people knew about it.
Mm.
It can really shift the way we deal with this thing, and we'll make massive progress if we do. Thanks again, Kathy. Great show.
Yeah, thanks for that, Warren. And you know, you refer to your spectacles as a device, and we don't often see them as devices, but a hearing aid we will definitely see as a device, right?
So yeah, absolutely.
Like you're saying, sometimes it's just about how some of these ideas and concepts are mainstreamed. All right, Warren. Thanks for that call.
Thanks.
Mawande, you're in the Eastern Cape. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Sis Katie, and also good morning to the guests. Sis Katie, I'm the person who's visually impaired with an LLB qualification. But what is really surprising with us and being given opportunities by the current government is really happening. Because I passed my degree, I think now is the eighth year with me being unemployed. Not even given an opportunity to get in an internship or a learnership. That is why when we summarize it to us people with disabilities, it's just that to have a disability is like it's a sin to this government, because there are policies, but in terms of implementation, it's like implementation doesn't exist. Because even if you go to these these offices, because mostly in the provinces, because there is the office for special programs that is located in the office of the premier, you find when you arrive there are people without disabilities. They do not even understand how can you be assisted. Really pains us people with disabilities. Because even if you look at the governing party and you look at the majority opposition, that is the Democratic Alliance and the ANC, even in their candidates, they do not have people with disabilities. You ask yourself, if the people who are governing and the one who are the majority opposition, they do not even care about such kinds of people, how our situations are going to be changed? Because it's just parties who are new. We have candidates.
Mawande? Okay, it looks like the connection to Mawande became poor there. Jonas, you're in Sasselburg. Good morning.
Morning, Kathy. Kathy?
Yes.
If we can get Mr. Ibrahim Patel to come and explain to us what is the position of people with persons living with disability in economic participation. Look at it. We had BRICS business, we had AGOA business. We don't know what is the position of people living with disabilities in those positions. Last year, SANRAL, they said they've allocated $2 million to assist people with disabilities to access business documents. There is nothing up to this far. Come here to Sasselburg here. They were training people for this contract of SANRAL. None of the people with disabilities were included in that training. So if maybe Mr. Patel can come and address us clearly so that we can understand where is our position.
All right. So clearly just the need for greater accountability. Abongile, let me then come to you as we get ready to wrap this conversation up and reflect then on some of the sentiment expressed by our listeners.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you. You know, I was thinking, imagine if we changed the language from persons with disabilities to persons facing disability. Wouldn't that tell the government or tell people at school or our workers that actually if they do not support us, give us the right resources for education, give us reasonable accommodation at work, allow persons with albinism to get grants, which they are currently being denied? Wouldn't that make people realize that the systems and what they are doing is actually disabling us? And so that's what I was going at, I was thinking about, and I have really started to believe that once I started saying it like that, people understood that they were disabling me. So for example, persons with albinism, if you go to SASSA and you say you can get grant, well, they ask you all, what is your disability? Now, how do you answer that? My skin is a disability? No, it's not. You are just born white. And yes, it doesn't have melanin. And yes, you are prone to skin cancer. But in that context, saying you have a disability doesn't really equate. But say you said, I am facing disability. And that would mean not being able to go to work or walk in the sun. That is a disabling factor. And for example, going to SASSA and not being able to get your grant, that is a disabling factor. You know, I also think about if we look at the apathy that is not motivating application of laws or individuals or kids who will be rejected at school. How would those individuals who are stepping in the way between us and accessing our rights and experiencing freedom, how would that shift their thinking? And I think for me, that is the power of the social model. It isn't just about changing the words, and not that it does this, but making us feel good, and it allows us to claim our sense of dignity, which it does. I think the model itself is meant to propel the kind of activity and the movement and resource and empowerment through the shift in society. So I think those are my parting thoughts, but I would definitely, concur the advice of my colleague that we should take to the voting polls. And we should exercise our right and our vote, because often our opinion is stifled. But when we are sitting at the table where things are decided, that allows us to be able to influence policy. And perhaps we should also look at the leaders that will be sitting there and who will represent us.
Okay.
It was very sad to see that very few candidates had impairments or explicitly declared them, so that we feel like we've got representation in politics. But I hope that they are, and I would appeal to political parties and candidates running that we are here, and policies that you implement forward should definitely change the social experiences and rights that we experience in the future.
All right. We're going to leave it there for today. Let me thank all of my guests for being part of this conversation. Really insightful and I think educational too. Thank you so much for all of your contributions, Tarina, Ari and Abongile. That's where we'll leave it for today. We're completely out of time. Up next is the book reading.